Morning. Today's daf and Shabbos Kuf Yud Dalet. We're on the bottom of Kuf Yud Gimel Amud Beis. We are starting at the two dots, five lines from the bottom of the Amud. Gemara yesterday talked about clothing. The Mishnah talked about kippah begadim, folding of clothing. From there, the Gemara segued into a discussion regarding generally clothing worn on Shabbos and the idea behind Kuf Yud Shabbos. They have to honor Shabbos. The Gemara yesterday, based on the Pesukim in Yeshayahu, talks about the various aspects of Kippur Shabbos, and one of them has to do with the fact that the clothing on Shabbos has to be different than the clothing during the week. Rav Yochanan says that which honors him is referred to as his clothing, and the Gemara spent a lot of time yesterday discussing the importance of clothing. We darshan Pesukim in Megillas Rus, also having to do with the clothing that was worn by Rus when she goes visits Boaz. So obviously, yesterday was a big day dedicated to the topic of clothing. The Gemara now is just going to go off on a small tangent, and then we're going to come back to the discussion of clothing. The Gemara at the two dots, Vesachas Kvado Yakard Yakud Ki Yakud Eish. The Gemara over here is heading from Sefer Yeshayahu, 10th Perek, and it is a reference to the death of the army of Sancheriv. Sancheriv, during the Bayis Rishon, during the first Beis Hamikdash, successfully destroyed the northern kingdom, dispersed them amongst the nations, hence the ten lost tribes, and was making a campaign against the southern, against the south. And he was headed toward Yehuda, and he laid a siege on the city of Yerushalayim and was ready to attack Yerushalayim. At the time, the king of Yerushalayim was Chizkiyahu HaMelech, and a tremendous miracle takes place, where on the night prior to the intent of going into Yerushalayim and destroying Yerushalayim, 185,000 soldiers of Sancheriv died, and their bodies were burnt. Or the Navi here in Yeshayahu describes that v'tachas kvodo, underneath their kavod, yakad yakud ki yakud eish. And the exact interpretation, the meaning of that pasuk is unclear, and the Amoraim offer different explanations of what exactly happened to the soldiers of the army, as described by the Sefer Yeshayahu. So we start off number one. Amar Rav Yochanan v'sachas kavodo v'lo kavodo mamish. So Rav Yochanan's understanding is that underneath their clothing, but not the clothing themselves. Meaning the word kavodo, according to Rav Yochanan, is actually a reference to the clothing. This is consistent with the Rav Yochanan that we saw in yesterday's daf. Rav Yochanan tamid, Rav Yochanan karo lemane mechubad atai. So that means to say that according to Rav Yochanan, the word mechubad mentioned in Yeshayahu, that's a reference to the clothing. And so that what that means to say is that according to Rav Yochanan, the bodies actually were burnt. That is the understanding. And the word tachas, according to Rav Yochanan, means underneath. Tachas could mean one of two things in Chumash, in the Navi. It could either mean underneath or it could mean in exchange for. Rashi cites Pesukim that describe both of these interpretations. So from Rav Yochanan's standpoint, the word kvodo means the clothing. Tachas means underneath. And so that means to say that their bodies actually burnt. A second interpretation, Rav Elazar Omer, v'sachas kvodo, tachas kvodo mamish. The tachas kvodo means that instead of, meaning that he understands the word tachas to mean not underneath, but rather instead of, in placement of. And kvodo is an actually reference to their body. So that means to say that their body, instead of being their bodies, was exchanged for a pile of ash. Now, Rav Yochanan and Rav Elazar agree with the conclusion. It's just a question of how you get to that conclusion. So according to Rav Elazar, he's disputing two points. One, the word tachas is to be understood, not underneath, but rather in place of. And two, kvodo does not mean the clothing, but it actually means their bodies themselves. However, even with that stated, his conclusion comes out to be the same, which is that their bodies were actually burnt, the bodies of the soldiers. And Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani Amar tachas kvodo, kisreifas b'nei Aaron, malahalan sreifa neshama v'guf kayim, afkan sreifa neshama v'guf kayim. And the third interpretation is Rav Shmuel bar Nachmani. He says that he understands the word tachas to be underneath, like Rav Yochanan. Kvodo he understands to be actually a reference to the body, like Rav Elazar. So he takes a hybrid approach in terms of how to understand the Pesukim. So what does that mean now, underneath their body? What could that possibly mean? So the Gemara goes on to explain that he understands that their burning of their bodies was much like the burning of the Bnei Aaron. Nadav and Avihu, so there, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes their lives and he burns them, the neshamas were, so to say, removed from the body, incinerated, so to say, but the bodies were left intact, and that's the description of the soldiers. The tachas kavodo, underneath their physical body, the neshama were taken. Okay, those are the three ways to understand the pasuk in Yeshayahu as it relates to the death of the soldiers. What does that have to do with our discussion over here? It's just that Rav Yochanan, for a second time, made mention of the fact that the way he understands the word kavod is a reference to the clothing, because the clothing provides an honor and regard for a person. Amar Rav Acha bar Abba Amar Rav Yochanan. We are going to continue now as we now turn to the top of Kuf Yud Aleph and Aleph. I mean, I'm the Shinui Begadim in the Torah. How do I know this idea of Shinui Begadim? The changing of clothing. And as Rashi explains over here, what does that mean, changing of clothing? Rashi writes, top Rashi, Shu Derech Kavod Lifnei Hamakom. This is a way of honoring Kadosh Baruch Hu by changing clothing. Meaning, as we were discussing in yesterday's daf, changing clothing for Shabbos is a way of being mechabit Shabbos, honoring Shabbos. So in general, when you change clothing, that is a sign of honor. Shenemro Fashadus Begadav Lavash Begadav Machirim. We know that the Kohen who is involved in the mitzvah of Hotzas Hadeshen, removing the ashes from the top of the Mizbeach, so when coming back to do the Avodah, he changes his clothing. This is generally teaching us proper conduct. The clothing that you wear in order to prepare the food should not be the same clothing that you're wearing when you're serving the food. And so when the Kohen is doing the Hotzas Hadashen, so that's analogous to the cooking of the food, and meanwhile doing the actual Avodah itself, that's the serving of the food, and it shouldn't be the same clothing that's being worn, it's just simply not proper honor and respect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's why a change of clothing is demanded, and that is what we are to learn in general, that a change of clothing is a way of showing proper honor and respect. Amar Rav Chiya bar Abba, Amar Rav Yochanan. The Gemara is going to be quoting three successive statements by Rabbi Chiya bar Abba in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Number one, Genai lo tamachachem shiyeta b'na'alim ha'metula'im l'shuk. It would be embarrassment and degradation for a tamachachem to go out with shoes that are tattered. V'ha Rav Acha bar Chanina nafik. Now the Gemara notes that there was an Amora who did so, and the Gemara is not speaking Lashon Hara Chalila. The Gemara is just simply saying that we're assuming that his conduct is proper conduct, and meanwhile, he did so. So Amar of Achabre, Rav Nachman betalei agabe talei. No. To wear shoes that have one patch on them, that is, in of itself is acceptable, that's understandable. But to have the shoes so tattered that there are patches on top of patches, that's a degradation. That is something that a Talmid Chacham should not do. Statement number two. Amar of Achabar Abba Amar of Yochanan kol Talmid Chacham. Shenimtza revav al bigdo chayv misa. Any Talmid Chacham who has a stain on his clothing is subject to the Misa penalty, to the death penalty. Obviously, the Gemara here is not referring to Misa Bidei Adam. This is not a capital crime. But in other words, a person who is representing the Torah, Rashi writes, Chayev Misa, Shitzarech Lios Chashuv Hagon Lechvod Torah. So this person is a Talmid Chacham, he's representing the Torah. So under those circumstances, he's held to a much higher standard, and for him to have a stain on his clothing would absolutely be an affront to the Torah that he's representing, and so therefore, Misa Bidei Shemayim. Shenamah, the pasuk says, Kol Mesanei Oavei Mavis. Anyone who is hating a Kadosh Baruch Hu is somebody who loves death. And Al Tikrei Mesanei Ela Masnei. Not only are we describing the person who is hating, but causes other people to hate, meaning he himself is serving as the Chilul Hashem. And people look at that individual, say he's the Talmid Chacham, and now they think poorly of the Torah. So under those circumstances, he's masni'ei, causing other people to hate. And so therefore, he's ohev mavis. That such an individual is going to be somebody who is going to embrace death. That's the chiyuv misa, as we just described. Ravina Amar, now according to Ravina, slightly different version of the discussion we had. He didn't have the word revav, which is generally a grease stain, but he had the word revad, itmar. Revad Rashi describes as a stain of Shechvat Zera. V'lapligi, the Gemara says, now there really is no disagreement over here. They're both bad, and they're both are going to create a Chilul Hashem. Habaglimi habalavusha. It just depends on where the stain is. If we're describing the outer coat, so there, a grease stain would be embarrassing and it would serve as a chilah Hashem. Levusha is a clothing that's worn underneath. And if there's shechva zera found in that clothing, so that represents another chilah Hashem. I'm Rabbi Chaber Ava, I'm Rabbi Yochanan. We're up to now the third statement, which is my dechsiv kasher halach abdi Yishayahu arum v'yachek. The Navi describes Yishayahu as walking both naked and barefoot. And the Yishayahu on a number of occasions was asked not only to speak about the impending doom that was going to happen and the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, but also to act it out as well and to demonstrate to others exactly the state of affairs of the Jewish people. And he was asked to walk out naked and barefoot. Now the Gemara over here cannot possibly deal with the idea that the pasuk here is to be taken literally, and so therefore the Gemara is going to use this opportunity to speak about this pasuk and darshan. Arum bebegadim beluim. Arum naked over here just simply means that he went out in clothing that was worn out, and yachay bemanalim hametulaim. And barefoot just simply means that he went out with shoes that were tattered. That is the understanding of the pasuk over here, and it's indicative of the fact that the Jewish people, the state that they're in, is one in which they are naked and devoid of mitzvos, and so again demonstrating the impending destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara now is going to return to a discussion regarding clothing. Tanan Hasam, we'll start with a Mishnah. This Mishnah is in Mikvos, 9th Perek. Revaval Amirdach says that if I have a grease stain, we just mentioned it as one of the three statements of Rabbi Chia Ba'aba, the name of Rabbi Yochanan. So the Gemara here quotes the Mishnah in Mikvos. If I have a grease stain that's on a saddle, on the saddle of a donkey. So chotzei saddle be a chatzitza, meaning that if you need to tovel the saddle in the mikvah, i.e. it became tama, it becomes tameh. And so now with a grease stain, so it is going to be chatzitza, thereby negating the tvila. Or Shimon Gamliel Omer ad kisara talki. So the grease stain has to be sizable enough where it is the area of the Italian coin, which was a known area that was at the time of the Gemara. V'alabagadim mitzad echad eino chotzeitz, mishnei tzadim chotzeitz. Now, if the stain is on clothing, so if it only went on one side, but it didn't go all the way through, it's not a chatzitza. If it went all the way through, it is a chatzitza. Rabbi Huda Amar Mishum Rabbi Shmuel af mitzad echad chotzeitz. Rabbi Yishmael is quoted, Rabbi Yehuda quotes in the name of Rabbi Yishmael, even from one side, it is still going to be a chatzitza. Bamine Rabbi Shimon Melakish me Rabbi Chanina, Mardas mitzad echad mishnei tzadim. Now, the Gemara over here is going to ask a follow-up question based on this Mishnah. Rashi is understanding that this follow-up question is working within the Shita of Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yishmael says that the mitzad echad, even if it's one side, it's going to be chotzeitz. So that's as far as a beged is concerned. So within the shita of Rabbi Shmuel, who says that when it comes to clothing, even on one side that's going to be a chatzitza, what would be his position regarding mardas? So mardas mitzad echad mishnei tzadim. Amar lei zulo shamati kosev o shamati. He says, I don't know, but I heard something similar. And this too now, as we're citing another mishnah from Mikvos, the 9th perek. Rav Yossi Omer. Rav Yossi is of the opinion, Shel Banayim, if clothing is owned by Banayim, Mitzad Echad, then it is a chatzitza from one side. Vishal Bor, however, if it's owned by a Bor, Mishnei Tzadim, then it's on two sides. Velote Mardas Chashuva, Mi Bigdo Shel Am Haaretz. And we shouldn't have the saddle be any more significant than the Beged of an Am Haaretz. If the Beged of Am Haaretz is only going to be a chatzitza when it goes through both sides. So the saddle should not be any more severe than that. And therefore, it only is going to be a chatzitza if the stain goes all the way through and can be seen on both sides of the saddle cover. Anyway, when all said and done, so we quote a couple of Mishnayos speaking about what exactly is going to be a chatzitza as it relates to a saddle cover, clothing of a banai, clothing of a boar, which the Gemara assumes to be an Amma Aretz. Okay. And again, the reason why it comes up is because just previously we talked, Rabbi Chia Bar Abba, in one of his statements, spoke about the importance of making sure that there is no grease on a Talmud Chacham's clothing. It is a Chilah Hashem. Now, as long as we quoted these Mishnayos and Mikvaos, so we noted in the most recent Mishnah that we quoted, that if I have clothing of a banai, so then it would be a chasitza even if it's on one side. Now, what does that word mean? Now, in the context of the Mishnah, we could guess, and we can come up with a really good guess. Because what's the contrast? The clothing of a banai is going to be chasitza if it's on one side. However, a boor, which is generally speaking an amaretz, so then it would be a chasitza, but only if it goes all the way through. So contextually, so we're probably going to guess that a banai is a tamu chacham. But the word itself, what does it mean? So my banain, that's the Gemara's question. The Gemara is going to give two responses to this question. And that'll take us to the bottom of our Amud. Answer number one. I'm Rav Yochanan Elu Tamid HaChachamim Sha'oskim Bivinyano Shal Olam Kol Yemehem. It is a reference to Tamid HaChachamim who were involved in the construction of the world all their lives. So now, as we guessed, now, I didn't really guess because I knew the Gemara is coming up, but contextually, you could see it. It is a reference to a Tamid HaChacham. But the reason why he's called the Banai is because he's involved in Binyan Sha'olam. So we are connecting the Tamid HaChacham etymologically to the idea that he's a builder. So there is a halacha in Bav Metzia, which is that if a person looks at an item with no siman, with no clear mark that the item belongs to him, he just simply says, look, I know what my item looks like. That is my item. That's what's called Tvias Ayin. It's what we would call just simple recognition, right? Much like you can identify people just by looking at their face. It's hard to describe the face, but you just simply know that person is so-and-so and that person is so-and-so. That's called recognition. So a Talmud Chacham has that regarding his items, meaning if and he lost an item and somebody found it and now he claims it and he just simply says, look, I know what my item looks like. It's mine. So we believe a Talmud Chacham. The Rishonim have a discussion over there in Bava Metzia. Is this a special skill that the Talmud Chacham has? Or it's just an issue that we believe the Talmud Chacham and we give him the ne'amanus that he's believed. Either way, this is only afforded to a Talmud Chacham. What level does a person have to be at in order to enjoy this special halacha? Zehamak bin achaluk olavchal. This is talking about a Talmud Chacham that's so careful in the way he dresses, that he makes sure that he does not wear his clothing inside out. Back in the day, the clothing was much, much more simpler than the clothing that we have right now. Perhaps we could think about it in terms of an undershirt, where it wouldn't be the end of the world if the undershirt was worn inside out. So yes, the seams would now be on the outside, but okay, a person can get away with it. It's his undershirt. So a Talmud Chacham, the threshold of a Talmud Chacham is to make sure that he's so organized, he's so mesudar, that his clothing is going to be worn on the right side all the time. I'm Rav Yochanan Ezer Talmud Chacham Shememana Masopanos Al Tzibor. And now we're talking about other thresholds of Talmid Chachamim. When is it that a Talmud Chacham can be appointed as a leader of a community? Zeshashol and also Dvar Alacha B'chol Makom V'Omer Afilu B'Maseches Kala. You're asking him questions throughout Shas, and he can answer all questions, and even Maseches Kala. Rashi over here says regarding Maseches Kala, you can see the Rashi B'chol Makom Dibra Maschol B'chol Makom. It is right alongside where we are in the Gemara. I'm reading the Rashi. Bechol makom bechol hashas v'afilu b'maseches kala. Delo regile be'inshe. People, do generally speaking, do not learn maseches kala. These are the smaller masechtos that exist. These are not the large, quote-unquote, main masechtos. V'zeh, and this Talmud Chacham, nasan liba begarsa maseches kala. Raisihi. So it's a collection of raisos, says Rashi. Kala v'la bracha, asur labala kanida. It opens up Maseches Kala by making the statement that if you have a Kala that didn't go through Sheva Brachos, she cannot be with her husband. She's usher to her husband like a Nida. Okay, an example of what is to be found in Maseches Kala. And we now know why it's called Maseches Kala, because the opening Braisa has to do with the halachas of a Kala. Anyway, the way Rashi understands it is that in order to be the kind of Talmud Chacham to be a parnas, to be a leader of a community, you have to know Shas in total, and even the minor masechtos that people typically don't learn. That's the way Rashi understands it. If you want to see a different understanding of our Gemara, you could see the first Tosfos on our Amud, where he offers a totally different understanding, actually pretty much opposite of the way Rashi described it. But anyway, that's Rashi. What's an example? What's the threshold of a Talmud Chacham? Where the members of the city have to support him. A person who sacrifices all of his time in order to engage in Chesed Shamayim. He's constantly in learning. Now, as far as the community supporting him, only with the most basic needs. In other words, with bread and the most basic needs, he's not supported and given luxury items. What is the threshold of being called a Talmid Chacham? And that is when somebody asks him halacha b'chol makom v'omra. You can ask him a question in any area of halacha, and he's able to provide an answer. L'may nafkamina, the Gemara says now, as far as the halachic significance, l'minuya parnas al hasibor, that is to make somebody a leader of the entire community. Ibechadim mesechta, so now let's say that he is proficient, but only in one mesechus. So be'asrei. So he can be made a communal leader. Ibekule tenuya, berish mesifta. If, however, he is proficient in all the mesechus, so then he's qualified to become a Rosh Hashiva. All this was responding to the question of what is a banai. Why we ask that question is because we quoted the Mishnah Mikvos. Why do we quote the Mishnah Mikvos? Based on the original statement of Rav Yochanan. So if you're following, the Gemara does have a flow. The Gemara always has a flow. The Gemara has a flow in terms of how we jump from one topic to another. In terms of the question of what is a banai, the Gemara now is going to be given a second answer to the question. So Rav Shimon Malakish says that the Banayim is a reference to the bathhouse attendants and the towels or the robes of the bathhouse attendants. Now the Gemara's assumption over here is, now what do we say regarding Banayim? What did the Mishnah in Mikvahs teach us? That if it has a stain only on one side, it is going to be a chatzitza. And the toveling it in the mikvah is not going to be effective, because of the stain that it has only on one side. The Gemara's assumption over here is that in order for this to be a stain, it has to really be something that you're a makbid, something that bothers you. Because we know that when it comes to a chatzitza, one of the key characteristics of a chatzitza is that you have to be makbid. It has to be something that bothers you. So the Gemara's assumption over here is that these robes that are given by the bath attendants are white, and therefore a stain on one side is really bothersome, and that's why it's going to be a chatzitza. The Gemara says, however, it seems that we know otherwise. V'amalu Rabbi Yana levanav bini. Rabbi Yana says the following to his sons. Al tikbereini lebekelim levanim velebekelim shcharim. Don't bury me in white clothing nor in black clothing. Levanim shem alo eskeve yekechasan beina avelim. You bury me in white clothing, so I may not be in Gan Eden. I may not be surrounded by other people in white. I'm just going to stick out. And shcharim shema eskeve avel ben chasanim. On the other hand, you bury me in black clothing, so I may end up being in Gan Eden. I'll be surrounded by people in white, and again, I'm going to stick out like a sore thumb. So I don't know where I'm going. Which, to think about it for just a moment, this is Rav Yana talking. So it's quite remarkable that he has that kind of uncertainty. But okay, he does. And so what should he do? Ela bekelim ha'al yurim. So bury me in the kinds of robes that are given out by the bath attendants, habayim medina seyam, that come from the islands. So anyway, what comes out over here is that these robes now are not white, they're not black, they're somewhere in the middle. Now I'm a sumkin in, and the Gemara interesting. Gemara says they're red. Now red is generally speaking not the color that's between black and white, right? I would have suggested gray, but the point of the Gemara over here is that it's not a white garment, it's a colored garment. Okay. And so with that stated, that obviously goes against what we just suggested. Reish Lakish said that these robes given out by the bath attendants are white. At least we think so, because even a one-sided stain would be a chatzitza. So the Gemara says, Lokasha habiklimi hablevushe. So the Gemara says, well, it depends on what it's covering. So there are different types of robes. Glime, one that looks like a cloak. So those are colored in nature. Levushe, the ones that just simply cover you, so they're white in nature. Okay, so the Gemara just simply says that there are different types of robes that are handed out by the bath attendants. Some, in fact, are white. Some are colored. Okay. That takes us to the end of the discussion regarding clothing. Clothing now made up a good part of yesterday's daf, most of yesterday's daf, and now half of today's daf. But now we move on to the second half of today's daf, as we're on the bottom of Kuf Yedalet Amud Aleph. And now we're going to turn our attention back to the Mishnah and have a discussion of the relationship between Yom Kippur and Shabbos. Just as a general introduction, so we know that Yom Kippur has a higher level of Kedusha than a typical Yontif. The Torah, when describing Yom Kippur, calls it Shabbat Shabbaton. So it has the status of being a Shabbat, so it has to be a full cessation of work on Yom Kippur. Now, on Yontif as well, there is a cessation of Malacha on Yontif. But we also know that on Yontif, there are many heterim in terms of the ability to actually do Malachos on Yontif, otherwise known as Ochel Nefesh. This is not afforded on Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur, you cannot be involved in Malachas Ochel Nefesh. You can't cook on Yom Kippur. You can't do all the Malachas that are allowed on Yom Kippur. So Yom Kippur, it has a higher level of Kedusha. The question, the really fundamental question that the Tanaim are dealing with is Yom Kippur close to Shabbos in terms of Kedusha and Isser, or is it on par with Shabbos in terms of Kedusha and in terms of Isser? Now, the way the Mishnah explained it yesterday, if we could just turn back to the Mishnah and look back on Kofi Gimel and Aleph, so the Shitas are is that according to Rabbi Akiva, they are on par with one another. Shabbos and Yom Kippur, you could put an equal sign between the two of them in terms of Kedusha and Isser. And Rabbi Shmuel says, no, Shabbos is greater than that of Yom Kippur. Take a look at the Mishnah. The Mishnah writes, Chal v'Shabbos kreven b'Yom HaKippurim. Right, this is the second half of the Mishnah on Kuf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. That the and this is the second Mishnah towards the bottom of the Amud. That the fast of Shabbos can be offered on Yom Kippur, Avalosha Yom Kippur b'Shabbos. Now we already discussed this yesterday, and we noted yesterday that in the time of the Mishnah, it was absolutely possible for Yom Kippur to fall out either on a Friday or on a Sunday. Nowadays, with our fixed calendars, it's not possible for this to happen. But prior to the fixed calendars, it was absolutely a possibility. And now we know the following, that when offering Karbanos on Yom Kippur, or when offering Karbanos on Shabbos, so typically now, when are the Karbanos going to be burnt? So we know that if, that the likelihood is that they're not going to be, there's not going to be enough time during the day to burn the Karbanos, not talking about the offering of the Karbanos, but after the Karbanos are offered, so the Chalav and the fats of the Karbanos are typically burned the night after, and they're burned over the course of the night. Hector, Chalavim, Hector, Ivan, V'Chalavim, right? The Gemara in Brachos talks about how Mariv, that we daven at night, even though it's not correspondent to a carbon tamid, nevertheless, a Mariv is correspondent to the burning of the fats and the limb that occur over the course of the entire evening. So, on a typical Shabbos, when do I burn the Chalavim? Motzei Shabbos. On a typical Yom Kippur, when do I burn the Chalavim of that Yom Kippur? So that will be Motzei Yom Kippur. Good. Meanwhile, the Mishnah says, what if now we have the 2 days back-to-back? So, the Shita of Rabbi Shmuel in the Mishnah is Echel v'Shabbos kreven b'Yom HaKippurim. That let's say we had Shabbos Sunday, Sunday being Yom Kippur. So the Chalavim of Shabbos can be burned on Yom Kippur, but not the other way around. Let's say Yom Kippur fell on a Friday. Avalosho Yom Kippur b'Shabbos. Yom Kippur Chalavim cannot be burned on Shabbos. Why? Because Shabbos has more Kedusha than that of Yom Kippur, and you cannot violate Shabbos by burning the Yom Kippur Chalavim, because the Yom Kippur Chalavim do not have the same level of Kedusha of that of Shabbos. That is Shitas Rabbi Shmuel. And Rabbi Kiva Omer, lo shel Shabbos kreven b'Yom Kippurim, v'lo shel Yom Kippurim kreven b'Shabbos. And Rabbi Kiva says, no, you can't do it in either direction. I can't burn the Shabbos Chalavim on Yom Kippur if Yom Kippur falls on a Sunday. I can't burn the Yom Kippur Chalavim on Shabbos if Yom Kippur falls on a Friday. Okay, and to put it in other terms, which I already did, but now that we saw the Mishnah, is that Rabbi Shmuel has Shabbos being greater than Yom Kippur, so therefore the Shabbos Chalavim can be burnt in Yom Kippur if Yom Kippur is on a Sunday, because you're burning the Chalavim that have more Kedusha, and that would be okay on Yom Kippur. The converse would not be possible, meaning the Chalavim on Yom Kippur you can't burn on Shabbos. According to Rabbi Akiva, you can't do either because they're on equal footing with one another. And the only allowances on Shabbos is to burn the Shabbos Chalavim. And the only allowances in Yom Kippur is to burn the Yom Kippur Chalavim. But I can't burn one on the other because they're on equal Kedusha with one another. Okay. The Gemara now is going to be quoting a Braisa that's going to be sharing this information via Drasha. It's the same information, but we're going to be darshaning this information. Tanu Rabbanan, as we are now towards the bottom of Kuf Yud Amud Aleph. Ola Shabbos b'Shabbato. The Torah describes how the carbon Ola Shabbos is offered on Shabbos. Limanach Levi Shabbos Shekrev Miyam Kippurim. So the Chalavim of Shabbos can be offered on Yom Kippur. Yachol Avshel Yom Kippur and B'Shabbos. I've thought that the Yom Kippur Chalavim can be offered on Shabbos. Tamalam Rabbi Shabbato, Divrei Rabbi Shmuel. Shabbato is an extra word. Rashi says that the Pasuk is superfluous, and therefore comes to teach me that Ola Shabbos, that I could burn the Shabbos Chalavim B'Shabbato on another day that also has the status of being Shabbos, i.e. Yom Kippur. But not the other way around. The Yom Kippur Chalavim cannot be burned on Shabbos. Rabbi Kiva Omer, Allah Shabbos B'Shabbato, Limit Achavi Shabbos Shekrivim B'Yom Tov. Now, according to Rabbi Kiva, working with the same idea that the pasuk over here has an opportunity for a drasha, his understanding is that when could I burn the Shabbos Chalavim? On Yom Tov. Meaning, if the day following Shabbos is Yom Tov, so then you can burn the Chalavim. Yachol Api Yom Kippur. What about if the next day happens to be Yom Kippur? Tamalam or B'Shabbato? No, B'Shabbato tells me that, no, I can't do it. Now, Kishatim Salamar, now the Gemara over here points out that each one of these positions of Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Kiva are starting with assumptions, and based on their starting assumption, that's how they conclude in terms of the drasha. Kishatim Salamar, the Divrei Rabbi Yishmael, and the Dharma Davos Kraven B'Yamtav. So, let's start with Rabbi Yishmael. What's his assumption? And that is, on Yamtav, a person is allowed to offer Neder Unadava. A person volunteers to offer a carbon. He's going to make Aliyah L'Regel, as we are supposed to do, 3 times a year. You now find yourself in the Beis HaMikdash, and you have to offer the karbanos that are obligated on Yom Tov. The karban, Chagiga, the Ola Sri'iya, the Shalmei Simcha, all this we're going to be discussing in Masechtas Chagiga at length. So these are obligatory karbanos that you, of course, offer on Yom Tov itself. But let's say on top of that, you also made a voluntary offering to offer in the Beis HaMikdash. Can you offer that in Yom Tov? So it's not clear, meaning if you think about it, there is it's voluntary, it's not obligatory. Is there Ochel Nefesh involved? Not for the Ola Sri'iya. Anyway, not for a Neder Nedava, which is a Karban Ola. Anyway, can Neder Nedava be offered on Yom Tov? So it's a Machlokas in the Gemara in Beitza. And here the Gemara's assumption is, Rabbi Shmuel's answer to that question is, yes, you can. So, let's think through the logic here of the Gemara. If, according to Rabbi Shmuel, I can offer Neder Nedava on Yom Tov, it goes without saying that if Yom Tov follows a Shabbos, I could take the Chalavim of Shabbos and offer them on Yom Tov. If I can offer Neder Nedava on Yom Tov, I could for sure offer the leftover Chalavim from Shabbos on Yom Tov if Yom Tov turns out to be the next day. And if all that's true, which is, the Gemara is assuming, is correct according to Rabbi Shmuel, now we have a drasha. So when is the pasuk necessary? The pasuk is necessary for Yom Kippur. That is all according to Rabbi Shmuel. Now let's move to Rabbi Kiva. L'divrei Rabbi Kiva, Nedar Medavos ein krevim b'Yom Tov. So Rabbi Kiva says that Nedar Medavos cannot be offered on Yom Tov. If you have a Neder Nedava, you're going to bring it to the Beis HaMikdash, just simply not on Yom Tov. There is no hetter to do so on Yom Tov. So now, v'chi'itzerech kra l'mishrei b'yom tov. So now when the Torah is telling me, Ola Shabbos b'Shabbato, that I could take the chalavim of Shabbos and burn them the subsequent day, even though the next day is a yom tov, what does that apply to? It has to be applied to a yom tov. Because without the drasha, one would have argued and said, if I can't offer neder nedava on yom tov, which is the assumption the Gemara makes in terms of Shitas Rabbi Akiva, then I cannot also offer chalavim of the previous day Shabbos. So what the drasha, what the pasuk is coming to teach me, is that I'm allowed to offer the chalavim of Shabbos on the subsequent day, if the subsequent day is Yom Tov. That is Shitas Rabbi Akiva. Okay, so based on the starting assumption regarding what is, whether or not Nedava can be offered on Yom Tov, so by there we just simply now extend it and apply the drasha of Ola Shabbos B'Shabbato. Amar Rabbi Zeres, now we turn to the Amud Beis. So Rabbi Zera says that when I used to live in Bavel, remember Rabbi Zera made Aliyah? So he says, when I lived in Bavel, here's what I thought. The following brisa, let's learn the brisa together. Yom Kippur Shechal Yosar of Shabbos, if Yom Kippur falls on a Friday, La Yu Token, Uvemotse Shabbos, La Yu Mavdilin. And on Motse Shabbos, no Havdalah was done. So here the brisa teaches us two things. What happens if Yom Kippur falls out on a Friday vis-a-vis Tkia? What happens if Yom Kippur falls out on a Sunday vis-a-vis Havdalah? Now, in order to appreciate and understand this price, let's remind each other. Havdalah, I don't think we need reminders. I think we all know when it comes to Motzei Shabbos, typically speaking, you make Havdalah. When you're going from Shabbos to Chol, obviously Havdalah. You're dropping down in Kedusha from Shabbos to a regular weekday. Even when you're going from Shabbos to Yontif, Havdalah. You're going from Shabbos to Yontif. Yontif is not as high level of Kedusha as Shabbos, so Havdalah. What if you're going from Shabbos to Yom Kippur? What if Sunday's Yom Kippur? Do I make Havdalah? So the Braisa says no Havdalah. Okay. That is one part of the Braisa. The other part of the Braisa, which we certainly need a review on, is the idea of Tkiyah Shofar. A minhag which unfortunately we no longer have. We no longer have a base of Mikdash. And that is that when you go up in Kedusha, so you're going to blow Shofar to let people know that we're going higher in Kedusha. So on a standard Friday, going into Shabbos, so you're going to blow Shofar. Now you're blowing Shofar every day, but on Erev Shabbos, you're blowing additional blasts, six in total, in order to highlight that we're going from a Yom Chol to Shabbos. And what exactly the blasts were and what exactly they represented, the Gemara, a number of places goes through it. We are not going to go through it right now. We're just simply just looking at the idea that the blowing of Shofar is an indication that we're going up in Kedusha. So from a standard Friday to Shabbos, so before Shabbos begins, obviously, we blow Shofar. Good. So blowing Shofar is an indication going up in Kedusha. Havdalah is an indication going down in Kedusha. When Yom Kippur falls out on a Friday, no blowing of the Shofar. That is what the Gemara is, that's the Braisa. So now we have a Braisa that tells us that if Yom Kippur falls out on a Friday, no blowing of the Shofar. If Yom Kippur falls out on a Sunday, no Havdalah. Now, who's the author of that Braisa? So, given that we just went over the positions of Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel, so we could have made an argument and said that this Braisa is going like Rabbi Kiva. Hold that thought. But meanwhile, here's what Rabbi Zera says, that when I used to live in Bavel, I learned the Braisa, and I thought Divrei Hakol Hi. I thought the Braisa could be learned both like Rabbi Shmuel and like Rabbi Akiva. Now, Kisalikna Lahasam, but then when I went and made Aliyah, Ashkechei Liyuhuda B'reid Rav Shemem Mepazid Yasev Ekama Rabbi Akiva Hi. And so, in Eretz Yisrael, they're learning the same Braisos, and I spoke with Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi. I spoke with the son of Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi, and he said, no, that Braisa is authored by Rabbi Shmuel. Sorry, the Braisa is authored by Rabbi Akiva. What? At least what I would have thought. Because the Braisa is telling us that when going from Yom Kippur to Shabbos, there's no elevation in Kedusha, therefore no Tzkiyah. And when going from Shabbos to Yom Kippur, so there's no descent in Kedusha, and therefore no Havdalah. The Gemara says, because consider, E Rabbi Yishmael, Kevin Dharma, Chavi Shabbos, Kraven Bi Yom Kippurim, Litka. Because remember that according to Rabbi Yishmael, who says that Chavi Shabbos can be offered to Yom Kippur, he clearly holds of a hierarchy in which Shabbos is above Yom Kippur. So what does that mean? It means now that when we're going from Yom Kippur to Shabbos, we should blow Shofar, Ki Hechid L'Havi Adi Dechavi Shabbos, Kraven Bi Yom Kippurim, so that people know that the Chalav of Shabbos should be offered on Yom Kippur. Now, admittedly, when I went through the Gemara and prepared the Gemara numerous times, I'm so confused because, wait one second, if we're blowing Shofar, that means that Yom Kippur comes out on a Friday. So, and we're doing that to instruct people so that they can burn the fast of Shabbos on Yom Kippur. But wait one second. That year, Yom Kippur comes out on a Friday. Why am I burning the Shabbos fast on Yom Kippur? Yom Kippur is before Shabbos, not after. So the pshat is, and Rashi says it, it took me a while to process this, but Rashi says it. When you're blowing Shofar, when Yom Kippur falls out on a Friday, that is instructional to people. You're educating people. By blowing Shofar, it is a clear indication that Shabbos is on a higher level than Yom Kippur. So that in subsequent years, when Yom Kippur falls out on a Sunday, so you'll now know and be able to inform and instruct people, oh yeah, remember when Yom Kippur came out before Shabbos, we blew Shofar, showing us that Yom Kippur now is not as a high level as that of Shabbos, so that if Yom Kippur falls out on a Sunday, so now I know that we could burn the Chalavim of Shabbos on Yom Kippur, because Shabbos has more Kedusha than that of Yom Kippur. Okay, good. Good. V'amina lei. Ana ko'anim zuzinhe. Now he says, now look, I don't understand. Meaning, with this idea of instruction and educating, who are we talking to right now? Meaning this is a halacha of burning of chalavim. We're talking to the Kohanim. You think the Kohanim need the education? Kohanim's reason, the Kohanim running the Beis HaMikdash know exactly what they're doing, and they don't need this education. To which the Gemara says, Amalei Mar Kashisha Brinder of Chista, the Rav Ashi, Miyamin and Kohan is reason named Vatanan. Now he says, now wait 1 second. Why don't we consider the following Mishnah? Shalosh Lahavdil Es Amim Lacha, Shalosh Lahavdil Min Kosh Lachol. So, in terms of the 6 shofar blasts that are blown on Friday afternoon, so the first 3 is basically a warning to the people. Stop doing work. Right? They're working late Friday afternoon. The first 3 is an indication that, okay, it's time to go home. And then the next 3 is actually indicating this is the beginning, the onset of Shabbos. So, Kida Amar Abay L'Shar Amad Divir Shalayim. Now, who is that talking to? Meaning that's talking to the Kohanim. So Abai says, no, it's not talking to the Kohanim. It's talking about the other residents of Yerushalayim. So Hachinam L'Shar Amad Yerushalayim. So just because we're blowing shofar does not mean that we are instructing the Kohanim. The Kohanim know exactly what to do. We're blowing shofar in order to instruct the other people and to educate the other people. We could say the same thing over here. The idea that we're going to be blowing shofar is for the purposes of educating the others, the masses of Yerushalayim. So the Gemara says, okay, so what do we have right now? A brisa that tells us when Yom Kippur was on a Friday, we would not be blowing shofar when going into the Shabbos. The Gemara says, is that Shitas Rabbi Kiva or is that Shitas Rabbi Shmuel? To say Shitas Rabbi Kiva is the easiest position to take because Rabbi Kiva believes that they are on par with one another. You're not ascending in Kedusha when going from Yom Kippur to Shabbos, so therefore, clearly, there is no reason to blow shofar. That is Shitas Rabbi Kiva. To say that the Bryce is going like Rabbi Shmuel as well, so this is something which is debatable, which the Gemara now is in fact debating. Because according to Rabbi Shmuel, you are in fact going up in Kedusha, so would there be a need to blow? So one argument would be, no, there's no need to blow, because who am I blowing for? I'm blowing for the Kohanim, they know this already. And the Gemara's counter argument is not necessarily. It could be that the purposes of blowing is not for the Kohanim, but to educate the masses, the public of Yerushalayim. So the Gemara says, okay, let me ask you another question. And that is, Velitka kehecha deleida desharei v'knivas yarek min amincha lamala. So the Gemara says, well, why don't we consider the following? There is a purpose for blowing when going from Yom Kippur into Shabbos, and that is to let people know about a heter, a particular heter that's given on the late afternoon of Yom Kippur. As we are nearing the end of Yom Kippur, min ha-mincha ulamala, in the late afternoon, so there is an heter of knivas yarek. Knivas yarek is the start of the preparation of the food. On Yom Kippur, there is an allowance to start preparing the food. Now, the word itself is a difficult word to translate, and Rashi over here describes knivas yarek. You can see the Rashi. It is a little bit towards the bottom of the amud. Kniva ki aydecha gadol, ha'iman de kaniv silka. Rashi quotes the Gemara that we saw earlier in our Maseches regarding the Malacha of Tochen, cutting it up into small pieces. So Rashi over here seems to indicate that it is the cutting it up into small pieces. There is an earlier Rashi, actually, that describes it as taking off the bad leaves from the good leaves, which is perhaps the Malacha of Borer. Either way, there is a heter that as Yom Kippur is coming to an end, one is allowed to do food preparation, cutting up the vegetables, or doing the act of borer, separating the good from the bad. Even though it's Yom Kippur, one can do it as the day is coming to an end. Now, why that should be? Stay tuned, because we're going to see why. Right now, we don't need the why, but once there is a special allowance Yom Kippur, perhaps now the blowing of the shofar is a way of educating the masses that there is this allowance to be done on the afternoon of Yom Kippur. Amr of Yosef, to which the Gemara's answer is, Lefisha ein dochin shvus lahatir. So the Gemara says, look, blowing shofar would be an iser de rabbanan. In other words, the blowing of the shofar on a standard Friday obviously doesn't pose any problem whatsoever. But if we're talking about blowing a shofar on Yom Kippur itself, so that would be in a violation of an iser de rabbanan. One is not allowed to play instruments on Yontiv, and certainly not on Yom Kippur. And it goes without saying, not on Shabbos as well. And so, if there is a purpose in doing so, like, for example, the mitzvah of shofar in Rosh Hashanah, or in this case, like, for example, the education of the people, so on one hand, it would be allowed, but not if it's for heter. Meaning, if the only reason why we're doing that is to teach people of a certain allowance or dispensation, so that's something that you can't do. And that's the understanding of ein dochin shvus la'atir. where the Chachamim would not allow for the blowing of the shofar if it's just there to create the heter of Kenivas Yerek. To which the Gemara says, Gemara gives a different answer. Rav Shisha Breder of Idi Amar Shvus Krova Hitir Shvus Rechoka Lo Hitiru. So he says, look, the idea that they're going to be blowing shofar, so that is educating for the future, and that they won't allow. They only will allow the blowing the shofar if it has ramifications for the right here and right now. But if the only purpose of blowing shofar is only for future Yom Kippurs, so that they will not allow. V'shvus Krova Hitir V'atanan, the Gemara says, well, let's consider the following. Yom Tov Shechal Yoser Shabbos, if Yom Tov falls out on a Friday, Tokim V'lom Avdilin, so they would blow shofar, but they would not do Havdalah. Motzei Shabbos, Mavdilin V'lo Tokim. And then when it comes to Motzei Shabbos, they would do Havdalah, but they would not do the Tzkiyah. The Amai, the Gemara says, no, I don't understand. Litka Kehefe De Leida Deshari B'shchit Al Altar. In other words, why shouldn't they blow shofar? Shouldn't they blow shofar to let people know that you're allowed to shecht on Yom Tov? Ela Machvarta K'derav Yosef. So the Gemara says, fine. So it's clear over here that the that they would blow shofar. The answer that was provided by Rav Yosef seems to be the more relevant, more pertinent answer. That the reason that they won't blow shofar on Yom Kippur, that's on a Friday, is because they won't blow shofar in order to produce a heter. And this Kenivas Yerek is a heter, and for that they won't blow shofar. Okay, so to the question of a brisa that was taught regarding when Yom Kippur falls on a Friday, and now Yom Kippur is heading obviously into Shabbos. So would you blow shofar? The brisa says no, you do not blow shofar under those circumstances. Is the author of the brisa Rabbi Kiva? The answer is absolutely yes. Is the author of the brisa additionally Rabbi Yishmael? So that was what the Gemara has now been discussing for the last half of an amud, from the top of the amud right up until this point in time. And it is debatable. On one hand, it's not going like Rabbi Yishmael because the Shabbos has a higher level of Kedusha than that of Yom Kippur. You're blowing shofar to show that you're ascending in Kedusha. So according to Rabbi Yishmael, presumably you would blow shofar in order to show this ascent in Kedusha. And so the author of the Braisa is not Rabbi Yishmael. On the other hand, the Gemara counter proposes that no, maybe the author of the Braisa is Rabbi Yishmael, because even according to Rabbi Yishmael, there'd be no point in blowing shofar. And the Gemara just spent a lot of time right now discussing whether or not there is in fact a point to blow shofar. You have to take into consideration the blowing of shofar is Nisr Derabanan. Would the Chachamim allow the blowing of the shofar? If it's to teach us something right here and right now, so then that would be fine. But if it's to teach us a heter, so then that would not be fine. And the Gemara goes back and forth in terms of whether or not there would be an allowance to blow shofar just to announce a heter. Okay. Amar Rav Huna va'amrila, Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Rav Huna, Yom Kippur Shechalios b'Shabbos, Asur b'Kenivas Yerek. The Gemara talked about this dispensation of Kenivas Yerek, that one is allowed to start preparing their food on the afternoon of Yom Kippur. Now, we have not yet articulated why that would be, but nevertheless, the Gemara now has a follow-up question over here, and that would be, let's say Yom Kippur and Shabbos coincide. Would this heter of Kenivas Yerek be allowed under those circumstances? And the Gemara now is going to debate this very issue. So Rav Zera quotes in the name of Rav Huna, or in another version, Rabbi Abba quotes in the name of Rav Huna, Yom Kippur that falls down on Shabbos, so one is prohibited in this allowance of food preparation on after Mincha. Amarav Minatana, or Tanya Namihachi, Minani Yom Kippur and Shechalios B'Shabbos Shasub B'Knivas Yerek, Tamalam B'Shabbason Shavos. So when Shabbos and Yom Kippur coincide with one another, so then you cannot engage in the activity of Kenivas Yerek. Lama'ilem alamalacha v'aksiv lo sasu komalacha. Now, the Braisa over here, it is not talking about the performance of a malacha, because we know, of course, that on Shabbos you're not allowed to perform malacha. Alalava Kenivas Yerek, Shema Mina. So it's speaking specifically to the heter of Kenivas Yerek. Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan Yom Kippur Shechalios B'Shabbos Mutar B'Kenivas Yerek. Now the Gemara takes the side of Rabbi Yochanan, which is that even when Yom Kippur and Shabbos coincide with one another, one is allowed to engage in this activity of Kenivas Yerek on the afternoon, even though Kenivas Yerek may involve a malacha, like we discussed, so either the malacha of Tochein or the malacha of Borer, but one can prepare food. Meisvei, the Gemara challenges based on the Braisa. I mean, not only Yom Kippur and Shechalios B'Shabbos, Asur B'Kenivas Yerek, Tamalomer Shabbason, Shavos. And meanwhile, the Braisa we just quoted that says that you're not allowed to do malacha on Shabbos, and when Shabbos and Yom Kippur coincide, so you're not allowed to do malacha, you're not allowed to be involved in Knivas Yerek. So Lama'ilin, Lama Malacha, Vaksiv, Lo Sosuko Malacha. It's not talking about Stam Malacha, Allah, but Knivas Yerek. So it must be talking about Knivas Yerek, and it's telling us that Knivas Yerek is going to be Usur when Shabbos and Yom Kippur coincide, and that goes against the position of Rabbi Yochanan. The Gemara says, lo, the Gemara says, no. La'olam le'malacha v'lavar Allah be'aseh v'lo saseh. And no, it's talking about malacha, and the purpose of that pasuk is telling me that there is not only a lo saseh, not to do malacha on that Shabbos, but also an aseh as well. The word Shabbason is the positive way of the Torah telling us, stop and desist from doing malacha, but telling us in a way which is an aseh, not a los aseh. Okay, so just simply compounds the two. Tanya kavasa de Rav Yochanan, the Gemara quotes the Brisa like Rav Yochanan. Yom Kippurim shechalios b'Shabbos. Now we turn to the top of Kuftas Vavam and Aleph. So muter b'knivas yerek, it is allowed to be involved in the activity of knivas yerek, and mifatzim be'egozim and farchasim be'rimonim. And one is allowed to break open nuts, and one is allowed to open up pomegranates min mincha v'lamala from mincha onward. And here we get to the critical part. Now, the reason why one is allowed to do this is because of agmas nefesh, because it creates more pain. And we're going to come back and explain that in just a moment. And the Gemara talks about the various menhagim of the Amoraim. Rav Yehuda would be involved in this kanve karva. He would do it with cabbages. He would do it with pumpkins. That would become a charfe. However, they did it too early in the afternoon. They did it before mincha. And the only heter of knivas yerek on Yom Kippur is only mina mincha lamala. So they were doing it too early on Amarlu, Asai Girasim, Imarava. And so they told them that, a letter comes from Eretz Yisrael, Mishmei de Rav Yochanan, and Rav Yochanan de Asr, that in fact it's Asr, you can't do it at all, not even after mincha and onward. Okay. And whether or not the letter actually came in or not, and they were just using the Rav Yochanan as a way of bolstering their position is a discussion. But in the meantime, however, let us just spend the last couple of minutes over here talking about this idea of agmas nefesh. So we've just thrown together that there is a dispensation that on Yom Kippur, min mincha lamala, one can be involved in the food preparation because of agmas nefesh. Rashi over here explains. Agmas nefesh, his understanding, is that actually it increases the agmas nefesh. And if you think about it, it makes sense. Meaning, the last thing you want to do at the end of the fast, or towards the end of the fast, is see food. And then, furthermore, you're going to prepare food, so that creates agmas nefesh. And that obviously creates more inui. And on Yom Kippur, that's exactly what we want. We want to create more inui. And as a result of that, so what there is a dispensation that in the preparation of the food, as now we are approaching the end of Yom Kippur, so that's going to increase the agmas nefesh, and therefore an allowance in doing so because it's more of a kiyum of inui. That's the way Rashi understands it. Now, you could have explained the Gemara just the opposite, meaning because you're so starved at that point in time, you're so hungry at that point in time, so it pacifies you because now, at least you know that the fast is coming to an end. You could have explained the Gemara that way, but Rashi does not. Rashi explains that it increases the inui. In fact, take a look at the last Rashi, last thing we're doing today. Take a look at the last Rashi on the bottom of Kuf Yud Amud Beis, at the bottom of today's daf, El Alav L'Knivas Yerek, Ba'ama B'tal Shdemi D'Lav Malacha Kai Aleha Be'asei, D'Shabbos On Shavos, V'Kevin D'Medaraisa Asur B'chol Shavasos Hashana, Hacha Lo Sharina Lei, Mishum Agmas Nefesh, L'Midche Isser D'Raisa. Now, if Shabbos and Yom Kippur coincide, so you're not allowed to do it, but that's only because Shabbos is here. U'Vishar Yom Kippurim Shari L'Agmas Nefesh. Now, but if it was just a standard Yom Kippur without the overlap of Shabbos, so then it would be mutter. The Afagav Dichsiv Beinami Shabbason Shavos. Now, even though on Yom Kippur there also is this idea of Shavos, Rashi writes, Lav mi malachahu, ela mikol davar hama'akev milit anos. So Rashi writes something really amazing over here. And that is that the idea of cessation of malacha on Yom Kippur, so that is not a function of malacha per se. I'm going to reread the Rashi. Lav mi malachahu, ela mikol davar ma'akev milit anos. So what we're looking to gain on Yom Kippur is inui. Midasamchinan levi inisem. In fact, the pasuk of Shabbaton is right next to the pasuk of the inisem. Anything that involves inui is going to be part and parcel of Yom Kippur. So anything that enhances inui is going to be permitted on Yom Kippur. So the not eating, not drinking, not bathing, all that is a function of inui. Not doing malacha specific to Yom Kippur is also part of the inui ayom. And therefore, the knivas yerek, which is going to, again, this is Rashi's approach, which is going to enhance the inui, it's going to exacerbate the inui, that also is allowed in Yom Kippur, even though it violates malacha, but the Issa malacha Yom Kippur is not a function of malacha per se, it's a function of inui. And now that this is enhancing the inui, so therefore knivas yerek, as we approach the end of Yom Kippur, is going to be allowed. That is Rashi's understanding of what is the purpose of knivas yerek, why even though, despite the fact that it's a malacha, it's allowed on the afternoon of Yom Kippur, and when Yom Kippur coincides with Shabbos, and now you have to take in consideration Shabbos as well, so is knivas yerek going to be allowed? So again, a machlokas amongst the Amarayim, whether it is allowed or it is not allowed. And then ultimately, the Gemara noted at the end of the perek that people got a little bit too carried away with this idea of knivas yerek. They were doing so too early, and so therefore a pronouncement came down that Rabbi Yochanan said that you cannot be involved in the practice of knivas yerek. Let's quickly recap our daf today. We started off our daf by first a short tangent regarding the 185,000 soldiers of Sancheriv who died, and exactly the Navi describes that the bodies were burned. Exactly what does that mean? Three opinions amongst the Amoraim. Next, we talked about we went back to the topic of clothing. The idea that changing clothing is a sign of honor and respect. How do I know that? The Gemara cites sources for that. That takes us to the top of Kuf Yudalad Amud Aleph. Proper dress for a Talmud Chacham. Three successive statements that are made by Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba in the name of Yochanan regarding the importance and significance of a Talmud Chacham, who is a beacon of Torah and is carrying basically the banner of Kavod HaTorah. So he has to dress impeccably, and the importance and the consequences of not dressing impeccably for Talmud Chacham. Then in the middle of Kuf Yudalad Amud Aleph, we talked about chatzitza bebegadim. We talked about what exactly would be a chatzitza, a stain, that would be a barrier of the water and disqualifying the tefillah if this clothing needed to be toveled in the mikvah. Whether or not the stain has to be on one side, whether it has to go through both sides, the clothing of a banai versus the clothing of a boor. What is a banai? Two interpretations, Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Okay, but the overall topic was chatzitza by a beged. As we move to the bottom of Kuf Yudalad Amud Aleph, we then went on to discuss the machlokas Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kiva in terms of the relationship of Shabbos and Yom Kippur and where they exist in terms of level. Rabbi Kiva says that Yom Kippur and Shabbos are on par with one another. Rabbi Shmuel is of the opinion is that Shabbos is on a higher plane of Kedusha than Yom Kippur. Practically what that means is that according to Rabbi Shmuel, the chalavim of Shabbos can be burnt in Yom Kippur if it falls on a Sunday, but the chalavim of Yom Kippur cannot be burned on a Shabbos if Yom Kippur falls on a Friday. Rabbi Kiva, who says they're on par with one another, disallows both circumstances. Cannot burn the chalavim of Shabbos on Yom Kippur, cannot burn the chalavim of Yom Kippur and on Shabbos. What are their, how do they arrive at that? So the Gemara in the bottom of the Amud quoted drushas, and the Gemara went on to explain that their drushas are going to be influenced by their assertions, by their assumptions in terms of what can be done on Yontav in general. Can Neder and Nedava be brought on Yontav in general? On the top of the Amud Beis, we quote a Braisa that talks about when Yom Kippur and Shabbos are back to back. So when Yom Kippur is on a Friday, are we blowing shofar from Yom Kippur to Shabbos? The Braisa says no. If Yom Kippur falls out on a Sunday, are we blowing are we making Havdalah from Shabbos to Yom Kippur? The Braisa says no. Now, clearly, the easiest way to understand the Braisa is that it's Shitas Rabbi Akiva. Can the Braisa also be going like Rabbi Shmuel? So the Gemara discussed that on the first half of Amud Beis. On the second half of Amud Beis, we talked about the allowance of Knivas Yerek, that as Yom Kippur is coming to an end, one is allowed to be involved in food preparation, cutting of the vegetables, the picking off the bad off of the vegetables, the Malacha Borer. You're allowed to violate Malachas, the specific malachas as it relates to the preparation of the vegetables, the heter, so to say, of Knivas Yerek. If Shabbos and Yom Kippur coincide, is Knivas Yerek allowed? Machlokas Amarayim. why is Kinivas Yerek allowed? So this morning, I presented Shitas Rashi, which is that the reason why is because of Agmas Nefesh. Now that's not Rashi, the Gemara says Agmas Nefesh. But what does that mean? Rashi's understanding is that as we are approaching the end of the fast, and now we are at our hungriest, so working with the food, preparing the food, is going to create even more inui, and that's what we want on Yom Kippur. Anything that enhances inui is going to be something which is desired on Yom Kippur, and that is what is being accomplished. And Rashi, on the bottom of the Amud, says that's why it would be allowed even though you're violating malachas in Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur also, there's an issur malacha. How can Kiniva be mutter? And so the way Rashi explains it is that by understanding that in Yom Kippur, even the malachas that are prohibited in Yom Kippur is also a function of inui. And so therefore, everything being a function of inui, so if something is enhancing inui by violating a malacha, so then it would be okay. Hence, kinivas yerek would be mutter. So, mutter is a funny way to describe it, but you understand. In other words, the kinivas yerek is given an allowance because it's enhancing one's inui. That's Rashi on the bottom of Kuf Yud Amud Beis. And then finally, we went through that various Amoraim practiced this kinivas yerek, but people got a little bit carried away. They didn't wait till the late afternoon of Yom Kippur in order to do kinivas yerek. They were doing so earlier. And so a letter, we'll put this in quotes, a letter was sent saying that Rav Yochanan disallowed kinivas yerek, hadron lach ve'eluk sharim, and that is the end of the 15th parak. Im Yirtzeh Hashem, tomorrow we begin the 16th parak of the Masechta.